The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing in Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, middle of the chapter called Soul Force and the Fourfold Personality, Chapter 15, mid-page 744. On the other hand, the turn of the nature may be to the predominance of the will force and the capacities which make for strength, energy, courage, leadership, protection, rule, victory in every kind of battle, a creative and formative action, the willpower, which lays its hold on the material of life and on the wills of other men and compels the environment into the shapes which the Shakti within us seeks to impose on life, or acts powerfully according to the work to be done, to maintain what is in being or to destroy it, and make clear the paths of the world, or to bring out into definite shape what is to be. This may be there in lesser or greater power or form, and according to its grade and force, we have successfully the mere fighter, or man of action, the man of self-imposing active will and personality, and the ruler, conqueror, leader of a cause, creator, founder in whatever field of the active formation of life. The various imperfections of the soul and mind produce many imperfections and perversities of this type. The man of mere brute force of will, the worshipper of power without any other ideal or higher purpose, the selfish, dominant personality, the aggressive, violent, rajasic man, the grandiose egoist, the titan, asura, rakshasa. But the soul powers to which this type of nature opens on its higher grades are as necessary as those of the brahmana to the perfection of our human nature. The high fearlessness, which no danger or difficulty can daunt, and which feels its power equal to meet and face and bear whatever assault of man or fortune or adverse gods, the dynamic audacity and daring, which shrinks from no adventure or enterprise as beyond the powers of a human soul, free from disabling weakness and fear, the love of honor, which would scale the heights of the highest nobility of man and stoop to nothing little, base, vulgar, or weak, but maintains untainted the ideal of high courage, chivalry, truth, straightforwardness, sacrifice of the lower to the higher self, helpfulness to men, unflinching resistance to injustice and oppression, self-control and mastery, noble leading, warriorhood, and captainship of the journey and the battle, the high self-confidence of power, capacity, character, and courage indispensable to the man of action. These are the things that build the make of the kshatriya. To carry these things to their highest degree and give them a certain divine fullness, purity, and grandeur is the perfection of those who have this swabhava and follow this dharma. A third turn is one that brings out into relief the practical arranging intelligence and the instinct of life to produce, exchange, possess, enjoy, contrive, put things in order and balance, spend itself, and get, and give, and take, work out to the best advantage the active relations of existence. In its outward action, It is this power that appears as the skillful, devising intelligence, the legal, professional, commercial, industrial, economical, practical, and scientific, mechanical, technical, and utilitarian mind. This nature is accompanied, at the normal level of its fullness, by a general temperament, which is at once grasping and generous, prone to amass and treasure, to enjoy, show, and use, bent upon efficient exploitation of the world or its surroundings, but well capable, too, of practical philanthropy, humanity, ordered benevolence, orderly and ethical by rule, but without any high distinction of the finer ethical spirit. A mind of the middle levels, not straining towards the heights, not great to break and create noble molds of life, but marked by capacity, adaptation, and measure. The powers, limitations, and perversions of this type are familiar to us on a large scale, because this is the very spirit which has made our modern commercial and industrial civilization. But if we look at the greater inner capacities and soul values, we shall find that here also there are things that enter into the completeness of human perfection. The power that thus outwardly expresses itself on our present lower levels is one that can throw itself out in the great utilities of life, and at its freest and widest makes, not for oneness and identity, which is the highest reach of knowledge, or the mastery and spiritual kingship, which is the highest reach of strength, but still for something which is also essential to the wholeness of existence, equal mutuality, and the exchange of soul with soul and life with life. Its powers are, first, a skill, kaushala, which fashions and obeys law, recognizes the uses and limits of relations, adapts itself to settled and developing movements, produces and perfects the outer technique of creation and action and life, assures possession and proceeds from possession to growth, is watchful over order and careful in progress, and makes the most of the material of existence and its means and ends. Then, a power of self-spending, skillful in lavishness and skillful in economy, which recognizes the great law of interchange and amasses in order to throw out in a large return, increasing the currents of interchange and the fruitfulness of existence. A power of giving and ample creative liberality, mutual helpfulness and utility to others, which becomes the source in an open soul of just beneficence, humanitarianism, altruism of a practical kind. Finally, a power of enjoyment, a productive, possessive, active opulence, luxurious of the prolific ananda of existence. A largeness of mutuality, a generous fullness of the relations of life, a lavish self-spending and return, and ample interchange between existence and existence, a full enjoyment and use of the rhythm and balance of fruitful and productive life, are the perfection of those who have this swabhava and follow this dharma. The other turn is towards work and service. This was, in the old order, the dharma or soul type of the Shudra, and the Shudra in that order was considered is not one of the twice born, but an inferior type. A more recent consideration of the values of existence lays stress on the dignity of labor and sees in its toil the bedrock of the relations between man and man. There is a truth in both attitudes. For this force in the material world is at once, in its necessity, the foundation of material existence, or rather that on which it moves, the feet of the creator Brahma in the old parable. And in its primal state, not uplifted by knowledge, mutuality, or strength, a thing which reposes on instinct, desire, and inertia. The well-developed Shudra soul type has the instinct of toil and the capacity of labor and service. But toil, as opposed to easy or natural action, is a thing imposed on the natural man, which he bears, because without it he cannot assure his existence or get his desires, and he has to force himself, or be forced by others or circumstances, to spend himself in work. The natural Shudra works not from a sense of the dignity of labor or from the enthusiasm of service, though that comes by the cultivation of his dharma, not as the man of knowledge for the joy or gain of knowledge, not from a sense of honor, nor as the born craftsman or artist for love of his work or ardor for the beauty of its technique, nor from an ordered sense of mutuality or a large utility, but for the maintenance of his existence and a gratification of his primal wants. And when these are satisfied, he indulges, if left to himself, his natural indolence, the indolence which is normal to the tamasic quality in all of us, but comes out most clearly in the uncompelled primitive man, the savage. The unregenerated Shudra is born, therefore, for service rather than for free labor, and his temperament is prone to an inert ignorance, a gross, unthinking self-indulgence of the instincts, a servility, an unreflective obedience, and mechanical discharge of duty varied by indolence, evasion, spasmodic revolt, and an instinctive and uninformed life. The ancients held that all men are born in their lower nature as Shudras and only regenerated by ethical and spiritual culture, but in their highest inner self are Brahmanas, capable of the full spirit and Godhead, a theory which is not far, perhaps, from the psychological truth of our nature. And yet, when the soul develops, it is in this Swabhava and Dharma of work and service that there are found some of the most necessary and beautiful elements of our greatest perfection, and the key to much of the secret of the highest spiritual evolution. For the soul powers that belong to the full development of this force in us are of the greatest importance. The power of service to others, the will to make our life a thing of work and use to God and man, to obey and follow and accept whatever great influence and needful discipline, the love which consecrates service, a love which asks for no return, but spends itself for the satisfaction of that which we love, the power to bring down this love and service into the physical field, and the desire to give our body and life, as well as our soul and mind and will and capacity, to God and man. And, as a result, the power of complete self-surrender, Atma Samarpana, which transferred to the spiritual life becomes one of the greatest, most revealing keys to freedom and perfection. In these things lies the perfection of this Dharma and the nobility of this Svabhava. Man could not be perfect and complete if he had not this element of nature in him to raise to its divine power. None of these four types of personality can be complete, even in its own field, if it does not bring into it something of the other qualities. The man of knowledge cannot serve truth with freedom and perfection if he has not intellectual and moral courage, will, audacity, the strength to open and conquer new kingdoms. Otherwise, he becomes a slave of the limited intellect, or a servant, or at most a ritual priest of only an established knowledge. And that, perhaps, is why it was the Kshatriya bringing his courage, audacity, spirit of conquest into the fields of intuitive knowledge and spiritual experience who first discovered the great truths of Vedanta. He cannot use his knowledge to the best advantage unless he has the adaptive skill to work out its truths for the practice of life. Otherwise, he lives only in the idea, cannot make the entire consecration of his knowledge unless he has the spirit of service to humanity, to the Godhead in man and the master of his being. The man of power must illumine and uplift and govern his force and strength by knowledge, light of reason, or religion, or the spirit. Otherwise, he becomes the mere forceful asura, must have the skill which will help him best to use and administer and regulate his strength, and make it creative and fruitful, and adapted to his relations with others. Otherwise, it becomes a mere drive of force across the field of life, a storm that passes and devastates more than it constructs. Must be capable, too, of obedience, and make the use of his strength a service to God and the world. Otherwise, he becomes a selfish dominator, tyrant, brutal compeller of men's souls and bodies. The man of productive mind and work must have an open, inquiring mind and ideas and knowledge. Otherwise, he moves in the routine of his functions without expansive growth. He must have courage and enterprise, must bring a spirit of service into his getting and production, in order that he may not only get, but give, not only amass and enjoy his own life, but consciously help the fruitfulness and fullness of the surrounding life by which he profits. The man of labor and service becomes a helpless drudge and slave of society if he does not bring knowledge and honor and aspiration and skill into his work, since only so can he rise by an opening mind and will and understanding usefulness to the higher dharmas. But the greater perfection of man comes when he enlarges himself to include all these powers, even though one of them may lead the others, and opens his nature more and more into the rounded fullness and universal capacity of the fourfold spirit. Man is not cut out into an exclusive type of one of these dharmas, but all these powers are in him at work, at first in an ill-formed confusion, but he gives shape to one or another in birth after birth, progresses from one to the other even in the same life, and goes on towards the total development of his inner existence. Our life itself is at once an inquiry after truth and knowledge, a struggle and battle of our will with ourselves and surrounding forces, a constant production, adaptation, application of skill to the material of life, and a sacrifice and service. These things are the ordinary aspects of the soul while it is working out its force in nature. But when we get nearer to our inner selves, then we get too a glimpse, an experience of something which was involved in these forms, and can disengage itself and stand behind and drive them. As if a general presence or power brought to bear on the particular working of this living and thinking machine. This is the force of the soul itself, presiding over and filling the powers of its nature. The difference is that the first way is personal in its stamp, limited and determined in its action and mold, dependent on the instrumentation. But here there emerges something impersonal in the personal form, independent and self-sufficient even in the use of the instrumentation, indeterminable, though determining both itself and things, something which acts with a much greater power upon the world, and uses particular power only as one means of communication and impact on man and circumstance. The yoga of self-perfection brings out this soul force and gives it its largest scope, takes up all the fourfold powers and throws them into the free circle of an integral and harmonious spiritual dynamis. The Godhead, the soul power of knowledge, rises to the highest degree of which the individual nature can be the supporting basis. A free mind of light develops, which is open to every kind of revelation, inspiration, intuition, idea, discrimination, thinking, synthesis. An enlightened life of the mind grasps at all knowledge with a delight of finding and reception and holding, a spiritual enthusiasm, passion, or ecstasy, a power of light full of spiritual force, illumination, and purity of working manifests its empire, Brahma Tejas, Brahma Varkas, a bottomless steadiness and illimitable calm upholds all the illumination, movement, action, as on some rock of ages, equal, unperturbed, unmoved, akyuta. The Godhead, the soul power of will and strength, rises to a like largeness and altitude. An absolute calm fearlessness of the free spirit and infinite dynamic courage, which no peril, limitation of possibility, wall of opposing force can deter from pursuing the work or aspiration imposed by the spirit. A high nobility of soul and will, untouched by any littleness or baseness, and moving with a certain greatness of step to spiritual victory or the success of the God-given work through whatever temporary defeat or obstacle. A spirit never depressed or cast down from faith and confidence in the power that works in the being are the signs of this perfection. There comes, too, to fulfillment, a large Godhead, a soul power of mutuality, a free self-spending and spending of gift and possession in the work to be done, lavished for the production, the creation, the achievement, the possession, gain, utilizable return, a skill that observes the law and adapts the relation and keeps the measure, a great taking into oneself from all beings, and a free giving out of oneself to all, a divine commerce, a large enjoyment of the mutual delight of life. And finally there comes to perfection the Godhead, the sole power of service, the universal love that lavishes itself without demand of return, the embrace that takes to itself the body of God in man and works for help and service, the abnegation that is ready to bear the yoke of the Master and make the life of free servitude to him, and under his direction to the claim and need of his creatures, the self-surrender of the whole being to the Master of our being and his work in the world. These things unite, assist and enter into each other, become one. The full consummation comes in the greatest souls most capable of perfection. But some large manifestation of this fourfold soul power must be sought and can be attained by all who practice the integral yoga. These are the signs. But behind is the soul, which thus expresses itself in a consummation of nature. And this soul is an outcoming of the free self of the liberated man. That self is of no character, being infinite, but bears and upholds the play of all character, supports a kind of infinite, one, yet multiple personality. Nirguno Guni is, in its manifestation, capable of infinite quality, Anantaguna. The force that it uses is the supreme and universal, the divine and infinite Shakti pouring herself into the individual being and freely determining action for the divine purpose. Page 751, end of chapter 15, Soul Force and a Fourfold Personality.